appreciate Brother Jerry's excellent presentation, and surely a subject like this has elicited some inquiries and some thoughts, maybe some theories in the minds of those who are gathered here. And Brother Jerry has studied meticulously this subject and inscribed on a sheet. You might call it the handwriting on the wall. But he can answer your questions. Maybe you can pose some things to him that he hasn't thought of before. And now is our time. So if you are a member of the church, a brother, raise your hand and we'll get the microphone to you.
Listen now, when they saw the handwriting on the wall, their loins were loosened, their knees shook, so it may be nobody's brave enough.
Well, Greg Gay.
Greg Gay's brave enough, okay.
No ball in Shasta.
I appreciate you giving us all this information, and I appreciate your study of this, and my knowledge doesn't begin to hold a candle to what you've shared. But you did make a hint that there was perhaps AD 33 Gentiles of the church. I understand from what I've read before, and I don't know really where this came from, but I thought it was like 8 to 10 years before Cornelius and his family were converted. If that's the case, and you mentioned you might modify that particular portion, what would you put in its place?
Since you brought it up, I wasn't going to do it unless somebody brought it up, but I brought it up, didn't I?
Yeah.
When I first studied this, I think E.M. Zur, I remember he said the Gentiles were converted at that time, and there are some others who say that. But then I've also read since then. In fact, when I was going back over this, I saw where a lot of the scholars say it was 8 to 10 years. I'm not sure how they come up with that, but anyway, they came up with 8 to 10 years. So then I thought, well, okay, that kind of messes up my deal. But then I got to looking at the conversion of the Apostle Paul. And many say that he was converted about that time. And so that fits too. It really fits in with what Glenn was saying. That he made a covenant with many for 1 week. And so he had the original 12 apostles, and he taught them. And then he said, all these things will come to your remembrance after the Holy Spirit comes on you. And then Paul was one born out of due season. He was an apostle too, but he wasn't with those original apostles. And so perhaps that's the explanation. That he made a covenant with many, with the original apostles, and then with the Apostle Paul. That would be the other.
And along with that, I wondered if the first part of verse 27 says, then he shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week, can be then referring to Jews. Because since the Gentiles were not yet converted.
In that case, it would.
Yes.
If it's talking about Paul, right. So that, yep.
Any other questions? Justin Owen.
I appreciate the talk. Thank you. I have a question. When we're looking in verse 24 of Daniel 9 there, you did make the distinction between to finish the transgression and to make an end of sins. But those things are close enough in their description. I didn't quite see the distinction as clearly as you do, especially with the ending of sins. What you said about that was sacrifice made was enough, I guess, in general terms. Is that what you were saying?
Well,
did you go into that a little further?
Okay, my point was that to finish the transgression meant that he finished or ended the domination of sin over us as Christians. We shouldn't be. Paul says we don't live under the dominion of sin. We sin, but we've been redeemed from our sins. As John said, my little children sin not, but if you sin, we have an advocate with the Father, you know, and so forth. But to make an end of sins, some translations render that to make an end of sin offerings. And so my point was that he made an end of sin offerings. They had all these sin offerings, which were a type of Jesus. All these lambs, you know, that were slain were pointing toward what Jesus, the offering himself on the cross. And he made an end of that. When he offered himself up, he made an end of all those offerings and sacrifices.
Thank you.
Other questions? Dennis? Was that it? Yeah, Dennis.
Jerry, over in the 12th chapter, in fact, the last few verses of this book of Daniel, he said, although I heard, I did not understand. And I said, my Lord, what shall be the end of these things? And he said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white, and refined. But the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away, and the abomination of desolation is set, there shall be 1,290 days. Can that give us some indication about when the abomination of desolation is dependent upon this statement that it's from the time that the daily sacrifice is taken away? Can you associate that with the six things that were going to be accomplished by the coming, by this 70-year prophecy?
Well, I'm not sure. Enos, looking at this chapter, he says up here in verse 1, at that time Michael will stand up, the great prince, and there will be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time, and he goes on to talk about that. And he says he doesn't understand when that's going to take place. And it seems like, I mean, I'd have to study this chapter, but it seems like maybe he's referring here to the destruction of Jerusalem. Perhaps in A.D. 70. I'm not sure if that's what he's referring to. But he talks again about the abomination of desolation.
In that 1,290
days.
Coming after that.
Right. Which would be 1,200, if I did a year for a day, 1,290 years.
Yeah. You know,
I don't know. I don't know.
Orville in this Revelation study pictured that or associated that with the Dark Ages.
Right.
After the church, they went into the Dark Ages,
right.
And the covenant.
Of course, in Revelation, it's 1,260 days, isn't it?
Yes.
I believe it. Here's 1,290.
I mean, I know it. And then after that, it mentions 1,335 days in the next verse. So there has to be some events that took place in there that would fill that spot. And I'm of the opinion that was the transitions of governments and events in which this the events of the Dark Ages took place.
So I'm sorry, you're saying, okay, this jumps ahead even beyond this.
Correct.
As referring when the church goes into apostasy and
but I'm
the Dark Ages and all that.
This helps us to set
about
when the abomination.
I see what you're saying. Start with the abomination of desolation, which would be 70 A.D., and go forward. That's a good topic. That's a good topic for somebody next year. But I'm not prepared to say.
I don't have it on the top of my head, but I can supply you the notes.
I'd like to see it.
Orville prepared on that because I made them some of my studies.
I'd like to see it. Yeah, it's, you know, this is stuff that Orville Lee and Brother Miller and a lot of those old time preachers preached on all the time. Now they may not have had all, and I don't have all the answers, and they may not have, but they preached on it. And they would go, and it's amazing. Even if it's, you know, there may be things here that you can't quite put your finger on, as with any prophecy. But there's enough there that it's just amazing. It can't be a coincidence how the time fits together. You know, it's amazing. That's true with that 1,260 days and all that too.
May I make one more comment about...
Wait for the microphone.
May I make one more comment about Orville's studies and what you always emphasized? he made great emphasis on the first part of the book of Revelation where John said, you will be blessed. You read and study this, you will be blessed. And the reason people are not blessed by the book of Revelation is because they don't read it, they don't study it because they say it's too difficult.
Right.
But God tells us his word is understandable. And more people need to read it and study it. Meditate on it and try to fit all these things together. God promised us we could fit them together if we tried hard enough.
That's right. Well, that's what Daniel was doing. And he said, I was reading. That's when I started praying.
And he said, the wicked don't have that understanding. They don't understand that they're going to go on being wicked.
Yeah.
And he said, the righteous shall know the truth.
Yeah, that's good.
On that subject of the chapter 12 and the chapters following the seven weeks prophecy, if you'd like to read two perspectives, one being that it documents the development of Roman Catholicism and ultimately leads to the Restoration Movement, you can find a very good analysis of that position in a book called The Cleansing of the Sanctuary by J.W. Kissam. And that book has been reprinted a few times over the years. It's not easy to find, but it's not impossible to find. Another perspective says that these chapters after the 7 weeks prophecy describe the work of Alexander the Great's empire being divided up, Antiochus Epiphanes rising up among the Seleucids and persecuting the Jews, and takes that understanding of the daily sacrifice being taken away. And you can read that in Robert Milligan's Reason and Revelation. Those are both books that are well worth your effort to purchase, and you can read those two views and look at their strengths and weaknesses. They deal with the other side of the prophecy that Jerry has mentioned, and they would all be worthy of our study. I agree, this is a topic we should all take much more seriously and put more effort into discovering the truth about. Any other questions? Jeremy Smith.
Jerry, first of all, I just want to say I think that you are a Daniel. I've always felt that way. You've always been one of my absolute favorites, and I know we probably shouldn't have that be that way, but I believe that you are a Daniel. But I did want to ask you, you took that, you said that you would go and have a parenthetical departure. If you didn't take that parenthetical departure, where would that lead you to? So if somebody doesn't do that, where would that lead you to?
I don't know. That's a good one. It messed me up, you know. Well, there are people, you know, who believe in premillennialism and all that, who say that this, and I really didn't get into it in depth, but my understanding is that they would go along with me until that last week, and somehow they say that week, then God transposed it or something into the future. And it's still in the future. It's going to take place in the future. When the prince they believe is coming is going to be the Antichrist. And he'll make a covenant with many for a week. He'll make peace with Israel. They use that, make peace with Israel and yada, yada, yada. And then in the middle of the week he'll be cut off. That'll be the rapture, I guess. Some believe the rapture's in the middle of that 7-year period. Some believe it's before the 7-year period, some after this. That's where they get that 7-year tribulation period. I believe that's right. And that's where it would lead you to, I think.
I just wanted to comment too, and that's what I would have assumed. I have one other comment when you're looking at the outcomes and it says to anoint the most holy. I think we ought to really focus in on that. That's an amazing thing. You know, Jesus is the anointed one, and he was the only person that there's three groups of people that were anointed: the Old Testament prophets, priests, and king. And Jesus occupied all three.
Right.
And so I just kind of wanted to also put that in there because that shouldn't be understated either.
It's an amazing prophecy.
Any other questions? All right, brother, do you have any closing statements?
I just want to say, Brian and Cherie, thank you for your hospitality. Appreciate it so much. And all of you brethren for your wonderful hospitality. It's a wonderful congregation. You know, I was in one of the studies down in Grapevine a few years ago, and Brother Johnny Elmore had the talk after lunch, and he got up and he said, I want to thank the sisters for being servants this afternoon and serving all of us. And I sat there and I thought, you know, that would be an insult to a lot of women to call them servants, but not to Christian women. Jesus said the greatest among you will be your servants. So I appreciate you sisters and brothers for being servants in the church. And I enjoy being here, and I just love being a part of this study.